luck can be bad luck in an instant if you're not prepared. It's like, you know, you see the train coming, the train comes, it's really in front of you, and you have the choice of jumping into that train, and you don't know when the train is going to pass again, right? But if you're not prepared, you're not going to be able to jump on that train. And so the luck is the train, but if you're not prepared, well, that luck is actually bad luck. If only I was prepared, you know what I mean?
You're listening to the CG Spectrum podcast. CG Spectrum College of Digital Art and Animation offers specialized career training for the film and game sector. Join our hosts, Career Development Manager Maxine Schnepp and CGS Mentor Justin Mulman, as they chat with industry experts doing cutting-edge work in film and games. Now, on to the show.
Hey, Justin, I just met with Pedro Andrade. He's worked on some amazing titles like Avengers Endgame, Wrinkle in Time, Guardians of the Galaxy. But he's also the founder of Complayer and The Next Level, which is a compositing supervisor training boot camp. So he is basically right now training other compositing supervisors to work their way up in the industry. He just talks about the current state of the industry, how in-demand compositors are. He also has a podcast, and I'll be sure to tag the podcast in our episode notes, so you can always check it out later.
We all have friends that would love to have companies, and from, you know, a young age, you know, that was not me. I was like, I'm gonna be your best employee, but I'm not someone that wants to have a company, to build a company. And now it's very funny because it's sort of almost the other way around. Like 2 years in, it's almost the other way around. Yeah.
Yeah, now it's something you're really proud of, and it's something that you can own.
Yeah, it's so yours, you know.
What came first? Because there's the podcast, which is very popular on YouTube. I love watching it. That's how I found out about you, from my friend Brittany, who is on your show. And then there's also The Next Level, which is the training program. So what came first? Was it the training program?
No, the training program happened after. What came first was the podcast. At that time, as you probably remember, there were like people couldn't get out of the house, right? So there were a lot of podcasts, and I've never saw myself as a YouTuber. If you'd asked me like 3 years ago, do you want to be in that space? I would tell you immediately, no way, no chance at all.
Same.
No. Same, right? But then I was like, listen, you know, I've many people during my career over the years, some people would mention that I have like sort of a different way of looking at things on the compositing side of things. And, you know, at that time, I think one of the good things that came out of the pandemic was this like sense of helping others, like as like so, sort of urgency of, you know, providing help to others, to other people that were like in difficult situations, right? And I think that definitely was one of the positives of what happened during the pandemic at that time. So that was my intention at that time, like how can I help all of these people that were let go from their companies, that they can find a job. Some other people probably they just were about to embark on this journey of visual effects when the pandemic hit. So, you know, what they're going to do, right? So that was the purpose. And so I wanted to do at that time a show that was different, not just showing tutorials. I wanted to bring the human factor in more, as much as I could, really. Because a lot of people still to this day, they fantasize about what the supervisor is, or what, for example, a developer is, in terms of like being a Nook TD, and all of those misconceptions that a lot of people have about, like, in order for you to write code, you have to have like this special brain, or in order for you to have like knowledge about, you know, sort of like advanced math, for example, linear algebra, or you name it. You know, the majority of my guests were people at higher levels in the hierarchy of things, like supervisors, leads, and people like that, exactly with the intention of demystifying that type of positions too, because everybody struggles with the same thing. People think that they don't struggle with the same thing, but everybody struggles and have the same doubts about themselves or about the world or about what they're doing or about the task or about the role. Everybody. Of course, with the time, you know, things will get easier, but this affects everybody in the same way at some point, right? And I wanted to demystify that as much as possible. So that's how it was born. So it was like a mix, awesome. But it started with the podcast.
The chicken, then the egg.
Yeah, that's right.
tell me a little bit more of an insider's look into this program and why someone might consider taking it.
Yeah, thank you for asking that. So, you know, at that time, I wanted to do something different from the norm. I always like to do things in a different way. And so I wanted to do something that I noticed for a few years back that there was no training for supervision, really. There's a lot of training for people that want to get into the industry, and that's it. There's no much more things past that, right? And so what I wanted to do, also based on experience, and not only my own, my experience, but also experience of people that I worked with in the past or I was currently working on, you know, I found sort of a pattern about like what really makes a supervisor a good supervisor. So I came up with the conclusion at that time that it was based in three pillars of knowledge, three or four, but mainly three. So the first one would be technique, because that's how you solve problems, because a lot of things that supervisors do for sure is answering questions from many different angles, mainly technical ones. So that was the first pillar. The second one, also based in my personal experience, it was scripting. I can't say enough times how important it is to know a little bit of Python. And after you know a little bit, there's so much more you can unlock. It should be almost mandatory. I'm exaggerating on purpose, but to just really sell the point that it's really important, because it will organize your brain, it will change your way of thinking about things, and it will help also the individual to understand the software that they use every day, because they will be able to understand how the software works, because, you know, they work in this type of mentality, you know what I mean?
And I'm sure it ties together with the problem solving too, right?
Yeah.
They're all connected.
Yeah. Problem solving and how to cut corners, not in quality, but in terms of like processes. How can I save time doing certain processes? You know what I mean? How can I help building a pipeline that is more efficient, that has like, you know, so much more optimized? You know what I mean? All of these things are very important. So if you can be that person, you know, in the best supervisors that I've worked in the past, they were respecting like all of these things. So the first one, again, being the technique, the second one being the scripting, and then the third one, management, which is where VFX fail so many times, right? I think due to my mixed background and having, you know, different experiences, even in different continents and different jobs, really professions, you know, I was a construction site manager, for example, also in Africa. So all of those experiences, you know, made me look at the management side of things in a natural way for the job that at that time. But I found it a little bit weird why certain things were not being managed in a way that for me was natural, but I didn't see a lot of people doing that. During my years as a supervisor, I was I put together like a sort of a way to help me manage my teams in that grew over time. And so I wanted also to imprint, because it's so important to imprint that side of things into the program. So those were the three main pillars, as we called it, to that the program is all about. And then there's an extra one, which is also really important, which is soft skills. Because a lot of times, you know, you can be the best person about all of these things that I just mentioned. If you don't have the soft skills, nobody will want to work with you. You don't know how to communicate with people. And you know, you don't have it, you know, if you don't have the soft skills, you probably don't have anything almost, you know. It's better to have more soft skills and less about some of these three pillars rather than the other way around sometimes, you know. So right. This is answering your question. This is for everyone that wants to be, as we normally say, for aspiring and current composing supervisor. We've had people from, you know, mid artists to very senior, to leads, to existing composing supervisors, even CG supervisors we had, and VFX supervisors. So we've had a little bit of everything, because again, I think it's due to the fact that there's no training in the market whatsoever for those type of roles, you know? So, and people need it, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's a sign of a good supervisor, you know? I would love to work with a supervisor like that, who I know is trying to do extra training, who's trying to improve themselves, because I think that's, you know, can be the downfall of some people or, you know, and eventually some projects when some people are kind of not willing to learn, they're stuck in their old ways and they have to rely on, these huge teams of people to take care of some of these problems.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to CG Spectrum for helping make this podcast happen.
CG Spectrum is an online animation, VFX, digital painting, and game development school that prepares you for a career in film and games. Whether you're just starting out or you're upgrading your skills, get personalized career training and mentorship from industry pros who have worked on blockbuster films and best-selling games. Courses are 100% online, and you can choose from one-on-one private mentorship options or group classes with just 4 students max. You'll also get access to career support services and join an awesome community full of like-minded creatives just like you. Learn more at cgspectrum.com. We're bringing the industry to you. Let's start from the beginning about how you got into visual effects and what kind of led you here to this point where you're now teaching people and leading people. So tell me the story of how you got into visual effects.
Yeah, so visual effects started to me as a complete accident. This was not planned in any way, shape, or form. So what happened very briefly, like the short version of it, was that, you know, to be honest, and on this point, the artist in the family is my brother. My brother is the one that works for Marvel. He draws really well. He's an artist for Marvel. I don't know how to draw at all. Although I was not interested in drawing or anything like that artistically on that side of things, I was always very interested in music. So music was my thing at that time. But, you know, life happened. Didn't go there. But I was always involved in bands and all that stuff. And I wanted to, I found myself in the middle of being an engineer. Of course, this was sort of a choice, but, you know, also a little bit of like options. Where are your options? Of course, you always have options to become a musician if you want to or try to be a musician, but it's very hard, right? And then, you know, we have our parents saying that, you know, it's okay as long as you have like a backup plan, which is, you know, you have a degree and then, you know, and then life happens and then all of a sudden you see yourself working on something that was not the plan, right?
Yeah.
My case was becoming, you know, working as an engineer. After some years working as an engineer, I realized that this was not actually something that I didn't want to do for the rest of my life. On a given year, I decided this will be my last year as an engineer, and then I'm going to do something related with music. And I wanted to do, at that time, I wanted to be a music producer. Because more and more, I became more involved and more interested in the other side of the music, like the recording process, the mixing process, and all that stuff. And so that's what I wanted to do. So at that time, me and my girlfriend at the time, now wife, the same person that we were talking about, we decided to, that would be, at that time, that would be up to, it would be either London or LA. In LA, because my brother was studying at Norman School at that time. So I went there and visited him just to know, you know, how are you doing, visiting the city a bit and all. And then I became sort of fascinated with that sort of world, that world really, although I had nothing to do with it. But, you know, the precision in the way that people talked about something so technical, but really artistic at the same time, kind of connected with me a bit, because I was also a little bit like that. That mix made a lot of sense at that time for me. But, you know, that was just like a curiosity, nothing more than that. But my wife, my girlfriend at that time, wanted to pursue more the visualization, the 3D visualization of things. And so when I went to visit him, I was like talking with her, saying, look, I think this is the place for us. There's a lot of music in LA for sure. So this is definitely something for me. And, you know, Norman School seems like, you know, the perfect place for you. So maybe you can, you know, think about this. So this was just an idea. And then it didn't happen because we realized that, of course, that, you know, not being from the States, we would have to be attached to a certain visa. And at that time, we didn't want to spend our, you know, our investment in just for the period of time in which we have, we would have like the right to be there just because we had the visa. Mm-hmm. These type of jobs, they don't happen, you know, like this, that it's all on you. So after 1 year, if you don't have the visa anymore, you have to go out.
You're
right?
Kicked out.
And so we decided we don't want to risk it. So we're going to go to a little bit place closer to where we can be for sure, and closer to home, which will be London. And so that's how London appeared in the picture. Mm-hmm. And so we came here. My wife at that time decided...
Where are you from originally?
Portugal.
Nice.
So she decided to go to a different school. In this case was Escape Studios. And the plan was not for her to be in visual effects, but because there's such a big industry around visual effects here in London, she ended up working in visual effects. But she didn't really like it. But anyway, she stayed there for a while. And at that time, I was doing my, you know, working as a music producer. I had my studio, I had my clients, a tough business, I'm not going to lie. But, you know, I was doing some things, but I realized that, you know, I don't think I'm going to, this is not happening really in the way that I was thinking, even in London. So anyway, my wife was working in visual effects. And once in a while, she would ask me, what do you think about this that I'm doing? Do you think it looks real? You know, and I was like, well, yes and no. You know, here, yes, there, not so much. I don't know anything about the software that you're using. I have no clue, but just tell me where I can change this thing. And so I realized at that time that that mentality and the way to solve problems and the way that to process like different inputs had a lot to do with engineering, especially the software, talking about Nuke with all the circuits and all that stuff, right? And also a lot to do with the music mixing, which was something that was my, you know, favorite thing to do as a music producer when I was, you know, working at that time. And so I decided to basically, you know, give it a go. I thought, you know, let's see what this takes me. I'm going to study by myself. I'm going to just grab a curriculum from, at that time, I think it was from Escape Studios, because it was available online. I'm going to give it a go by myself and see what this takes me. I have no expectations at all. But long story short, what happened was my wife started working in the industry, and of course we had some friends from the industry at that time. And 3 months in, I had my reel, and we were in this, I think it was a housewarming party of one of these people working in the industry. And she told me, hey, that's great that you're doing this and all that stuff. By the way, we're recruiting people for an internship. So if you would like to give it a go, just give me your reel and see what happens. And so next week I was doing the internship, no pay. So I didn't have any expectations whatsoever, zero expectations. I didn't know that if I was, you know, ahead or behind the norm from people that come from schools. I didn't know. I just followed the
program.
You're
totally self-taught. You didn't go to school for it. You're just like, does this look good?
Well, I didn't know if I was like, in terms of even knowledge and all that stuff, if I was pursuing certain things that I shouldn't be pursuing before pursuing others, or if it was the other way around. But I realized that within my colleagues that were working with me at that time, that some of them, they didn't know some of the techniques that I was using, or even, you know, for example, I don't know, I remember like a procedural noise and stuff like that. Not that would say that I was making more beautiful pictures or anything like that, but I noticed that maybe, you know, due to the fact that I learned by myself, I could spend enough time on a certain topic without, you know, because when you're in a class, you have to follow the class. The class can't stop just because one person is stuck on a certain concept, right? And I think that kind of gave me a little bit of an advantage, I would say. And that's what happened. So I started at Jellyfish Pictures many years ago as like with an internship, and the rest is history. Then I started working in as a freelancer at that time, which is far from ideal, because when you're starting out, you don't know anything. At the same time, you're selling your services as a freelancer. So those two things, they don't.
Yeah, trying to get someone to trust you, and you don't even trust yourself.
Exactly.
I talk to a lot of students about how hard it is to be a freelancer when you're first starting, because you don't have that foundation. You know, it's really hard.
You don't know where you are. First of all, you can place yourself in the thing that you do. You don't know if you're doing really well, necessarily speaking, or where are you, basically. But that was sort of the norm at that time in London. And so after that, I start, you know, working in different companies. I think one of my very early projects was Star Trek Into Darkness. And I was like, wow, okay, this happened kind of fast. Yeah. And the company that I was working with at that time was going through a sort of a tumultuous kind of moment. But in any case, you know, it was like all about like having different, as many different experiences as I could have. And I think that's also, although not an ideal situation starting out as a freelancer, but, you know, if that happens, I think there's also a lot of good that can come out of that, because you will be talking with more people, will be exposed to many different ways of working, many different pipelines, and you have to adapt. You know, it's not ideal, but you have to find, you know, the best out of every kind of situation. And I think this is true, you know, that there's a lot of good that can come out of it as well.
Because you were sort of self-taught and you have this previous experience as not just an audio producer, an audio engineer, but then also a mechanical engineer, are there parts of that background that you think have really benefited you? Like, is there some specific skills, perhaps from your engineering background, that you're bringing to these management roles now as a compositing supervisor?
Yeah, in many different ways. So many that I'm not going to be able to tell you all of them. But, you know, in a nutshell, what I can extract from all of those experiences is structure. Because if you have a structure, that means that you probably have a plan. And if you have a plan, that also means that you can predict problems as opposed to react to, you know, putting out fires all the time. You know what I mean? So I think all in all, that's, I would say, like the biggest takeaway from best experiences. And everybody has best experiences. And I think everybody should, you know, absorb and accept who they are, what they did in their past careers, different lives. A lot of times I see people trying to mimic others, whether it's in the technique that they use or in the way that they go about things, and they forget about being themselves. And that's exactly, you know, how they're going to win. A lot of people forget how to be themselves and how to be really unique and truthful to themselves. If people can do that, that's when they're going to win, because they will find their unique voice, their uniqueness, and that's what everybody's looking for. Nobody's looking for a copycat, right? So if there's like 10 people that they go about the same problem in the same way, whether they're winning or losing, none of them will stand out, you know? If there's someone, just one person, that do things in a little bit different way, people will pay attention. And this person do things in a different way, possibly because, you know, that's really attached to their personality. You know, so one of the things, just to circle back to the program, one of the things that I always say is that, you know, the intention of the program is to everybody to be even out independently on how they got in terms of like their knowledge about all of these topics that we go about in the program, right? It doesn't matter how you got in. What matters is how everybody will go out from the program. But the main thing is, I don't want anybody to be the same amongst themselves or be the same as me. I want them to be themselves. So what the program really is like exposing them to different angles of a certain topic, so they have like a different perspective. And different people already have, you know, past knowledges in a different ways. So this is like, as I normally say, like a different piece of a puzzle that we all have. I have my puzzle with some holes here and there. We all have like the big picture. If we look, you know, from a distance, we can perceive what the picture is and within this puzzle. But if you look closely, we're going to have some holes, right? So the problem is really, here's this piece. See what can how this piece can fit within your puzzle. Because we all have different experiences, different knowledges, different takeaways, different ways of looking at things. So, you know, the intention is really to find and pursue your uniqueness that already came with you. Because, you know, you're a human being like myself, you know what I mean? So it's really just like looking at something from a different angle and find your uniqueness in that way.
I love that advice. I think that's so fantastic. Because it is hard, especially for students, to find their voice and themselves. And one of the biggest questions I get from students is, how can I get into this industry when I have this whole background from another life, you know, or like another career? And I'm like, no, that's good. Let's pull that. Let's take that and use it. So do you think that's what helped you stand out? Because really, I was looking at your history, and you moved from, you know, compositor to supervisor quite quickly. So compared to some other people, like, it was like just a couple of years. So do you think that's what kind of helped you stand out?
It's hard to say. I think it has also to do with not expecting, because when people, you know, try to pursue something so much and it becomes like their day, every day, about thinking about that, I want to be there, I want to achieve this, I want to, you know, in next week I want to become this, next year I'm going to become that, and you know, they forget about like putting the work to be there with the right mind, you know. And because I came from a different world, I didn't have like much expectations about this. As I said in the beginning, I was not meant to be here, you know. I didn't have any expectations, you know. And I think that gave me the freedom to think about things without any sort of like attachments in that sense. You know what I mean? So I think more than anything, I think that's what helped me, I guess. The rest is a little bit of luck, being in the right place at the right time. Luck can be bad luck in an instant if you're not prepared. It's like, you know, you see the train coming, the train comes, it's really in front of you, and you have the choice of jumping into that train, and you don't know when the train is going to pass again, right? But if you're not prepared, you're not going to be able to jump on that train. And so the luck is the train, but if you're not prepared, well, that luck is actually bad luck. If only I was prepared, you know what I mean? And I think a lot of people forget to be prepared, because they're so worried about whether or not the train is coming. Well, it will come. Mm-hmm. It will come. Just do the work. Forget about the train. Have fun in things that you're doing. You know, try to be yourself as much as possible. Try to be a good colleague. Try to be a good human being. Try not to bitch much about like the industry or whatever. You know what I mean? Yeah. Sometimes it's hard, but you know, just have fun. If you don't have fun, if you're just looking for, I want to be supervisor, I want to be a leader, I want to be whatever, you know, you're not going to get there, most likely, you know, because you're concerned with the wrong concern. Yes. That's not the job, you know. And also, one thing that happens, and I see this repeatedly, is people wanted to be at that position without making an effort whatsoever to understand what that position is. That position, I guess people are more, you know, in love with the title and what the title means for their careers and stuff. And they forget that the title comes with a different job, you know, and the job is not for everybody. Not to say that it's more difficult and not everybody can do it. No, it's inherently a different job. You know, people want to go there, but they don't even, a lot of times, I'm not saying everybody, a lot of times they don't really know what the job really is. And so some people will be underperforming because they think possibly that this is about like, you know, now I'm in charge. Well, in charge of what? If you don't know how to be in charge, you're not going to be in charge of anything, you know? So yeah. It's a funny one, you know? It's a funny one.
So, speaking of advice, can you share some more concrete tips for people who are interested in getting into the industry? So you shared some tips for people looking to improve who are already here. But what about some people who are thinking of starting?
Well, first of all, it's really having fun and having all of that, like the constant curiosity about things. Pick a subject, whether it's compositing or any subject, and stick with it. Don't start jumping from compositing, then lighting, and then, you know, effects, and then a little bit, you know, just stick with one thing and be the best as you can be. Get all the resources available, and there's many these days, not so much when we were starting out possibly, right? But yeah. These days, there's a lot of stuff out there because the learning never stops. So if I think there's also another misconception that some people have, especially people that at those stages that you're just mentioning, which is, oh, okay, now there will come a point like in 5 years time or whatever, in which, you know, these people will know all about everything. No, that never stops. That never stops because technology never stops either. You know what I mean? And take advantage of everything, especially in compositing. Well, VFX in general is mimicking real life, isn't it? And there's free lessons every day outside, you know. How does a reflection work? Well, just look outside the window and you'll see. Especially for compositing, shadows, reflections, refraction, projections, all of that stuff. All of these are free lessons, not dependent on any software. And when, mm-hmm. if you really understand those, when you go to the software domain, everything comes natural to you. And this was also something that I tried to implement in my way of thinking naturally. I didn't do this on purpose. But, you know, in my mind is, okay, if technology fails and I don't have like this tool anymore or the software all of a sudden doesn't work, how can I still do the job without the tools that I'm normally relying on, you know? Mm. And so that is possible if you really understand, like, in a very simple way, what all of these things that we're talking about are really.
Yeah, I mean, you're a great example of someone who, you know, you made it to where you are now as, you know, someone who is teaching others, but also as, you know, the head of compositing. But you did it all self-taught. You know, you didn't rely on just having a diploma from somewhere to get to where you are now. You know, tell me more about that 3 months. You know, you mentioned, you know, when you decided, okay, I'm going to learn Nuke. Like, what happened in those 3 months? Because 3 months is way shorter than most college courses, right? So tell me about that process.
The 3 months came because that was the length of the program, the compositing program at the Escape Studios at that time. Oh. So as I said in the beginning, I mimicked everything, but I did it by myself instead of going into a class, you know. Mm. But yeah, I agree with you. I think 3 months, I remember thinking that at that time, what is 3 months for learning like a new skill? That's nothing. That's zero, right? And so I tried to compensate that in different ways, because what happened was I was, you know, at that time when I was learning by myself, I was spending, honestly, like 12 to 15 hours a day, every single day, no breaks, no weekends, no bank holidays. It was just like fully immersed in this thing, you know? The more you learn, the more you become interested in learning more. It's like a vicious cycle, you know? It's hard to get to that momentum sometimes, but once you're there, then it's difficult to get out of that momentum. And so it's like a, you know, you're sort of an addiction sometimes, you know? Of course, you have to be careful so it doesn't really become an addiction. But it's, you know, there's healthy addictions as well. This might be one of them.
I like that concept.
So what happened was I was putting this effort, you know, to learn this skill. Again, I didn't know where this will take me, but, you know, it took me to an internship. And then shortly after that, I was hired, like with a proper contract. So that was the beginning. But what happened at that time was I knew that that was not enough, because once I started having like a real world experience, I noticed, okay, there's a few things here and there that I need to improve, because now I've been exposed to, you know, different things, right? Mm-hmm. And so what happened at that time was I was, you know, finishing my day of work, and then I would study more at the house, you know, at my place, for another couple of hours, maybe 4 hours, depending how addicted I was to a certain concept, you know, because, you know, if it's like, sometimes you just want to, you just say, I just need to see this really quickly. I've just learned this really quickly. And then you think it's like a 1 hour thing, and all of a sudden you're 5 hours in without even noticing, right?
Yeah.
So that's what I was doing, and that never stopped. And then I adopted different kind of schedules on the subsequent years. I was studying, for example, during my commute, for example, you know, so I didn't spend so much time studying after work. But again, not expecting anything apart from the knowledge.
Yeah.
The rest, I really believe this. If you put in the work, the rest will come naturally, you know?
Yeah. 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 I like that idea of not having expectations and just trying to learn more. At the end of the day, if you're just focused on improving your skills, then people are going to notice eventually. You know, you're going to get more opportunities if you're someone who's willing to try something, or if you're at a studio and they say, oh, we have this problem. And it's like, you know what? I'm going to try it. You know, I don't know how to fix it yet, but I'm going to be willing to try it. Whereas a lot of other people, I'm sure you've worked with people like this, who say, well, I don't know how to do that, so I'm not going to do it. You know, and it's like, that's fine.
Without even trying,
Yeah, without even trying. And some of the best people I've worked with, like I can picture them in my head, some of the most inspiring people many of which have moved up into supervisor positions like you quicker than others, is because they're those people who are like, I'm going to figure it out. Even if I don't know how to do it now, I will figure it out. Exactly. Or I'll figure out some other solution and hopefully it'll be good enough to deliver this shot or do this commercial.
But it's about their journey. Yeah. It's about their journey. Because when you put yourself out there and you say, okay, I don't know how to fix it, but I'm going to give it a go. Mm. And during the process, you'll discover even different, you know, definitely different things that you were not even considering, you know. Yeah. Sometimes it's funny because sometimes even to this day, I see people with different levels of seniority, like sort of almost like afraid of trying something, it seems like, because instead of trying, they ask, do you think we can do this? Do you think we should try? I don't know. Give it a go. See where it lands. You know what I mean? What's the worst that can happen? Nobody's going to die. Probably going to win, you know, not lose. You're probably going to win.
Yeah.
That's something that should always stay with you, no matter how many years of experience you have, you know, because if you don't have it, you will not pursuing different approaches to things. You're just like stuck with the things that you've been taught or you know from, I don't know, many years. And no, it's about trying different things, combining things that you know, they should even be combined because they belong to different, you know, worlds even. Yeah. But that's exactly how you're going to do original stuff, you know?
Yeah. And you brought up a good point, I think, which is that out of all industries in the world, I think we're in a really good one for curiosity and experimentation, because you're right. No one's going to die. Like, we're not doctors here. Like, if you want to experiment as a doctor, a surgeon, maybe don't experiment on this person today. You know?
That's not a good idea.
But here in this industry, it's like, experimentation and curiosity is usually rewarded. And people notice that, even if maybe it didn't work for this project, people saw that you tried something. And I know when I would try to pull certain artists on my team, it's always about like, okay, who do I know? Who can I trust to figure something out that I don't have to hold their hand the whole time, you know? And those people are the ones that succeed faster and they move up more quickly. Tell me a little bit about what you think the state of compositing and visual effects is in now, and what do you see for the future, and what might people expect?
This is definitely a very good moment for people that want to start their careers, because we are witnessing something that we've never witnessed before in terms of growth, really exponential growth, crazy exponential growth. Not only, you know, the type of content, the quality of the content that is expected, the number of shots that each project has to have, it's insane. We've never seen anything like this, right? So of course it caught the industry by surprise. So, you know, although a certain company can have like 100 people, 50 people, 200 people, honestly, at the moment, that can only scratch the surface of what the need really is, because there are simply not enough people in the market at the moment for the amount of work that is out there. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's I think it's also a moment for people to really think about sustainability of this growth. Sometimes people grow because the opportunity is there, the need is there, and so people will go up because, you know, someone has to be in that position. Not the best at the job, doesn't matter. Someone has to be called in, you're going to be the person, right? So there will come a time in which things will be a little bit more even, and hopefully, because this moment will not last forever, we know that. And the ones that will survive are the ones that, you know, took the moment to also think about sustainability, to also think about how can I sustain myself in this position and be better at this position and be in the position in the way that it's needed and, you know, that everybody wants me to be. If we're only talking about or thinking about, like, again, the position by the position itself, the status or whatever you want to call it, although all of that BS, because that's comes down to, you know, being, you know, bullshit, really. If you don't put into work and if you don't know exactly what the role is, you know, there'll come a time in which only one or two will survive. And guess what? You know, the ones that will survive are the ones that are actually doing the job in the way that is supposed to be done. Mm-hmm.
Would you say that compositing is a safe, long-term job right now? Like what you think about the future of the industry? Do you think this is a job that people could have some job security in?
Let me try to think about the right way to think about it, because I've never thought about that in that way, because I don't see this being about the discipline. Mm. I see this being about the world that we work on, right? It's about like the VFX in general. So I wouldn't take for granted anything in this world, because this world doesn't work like that. So whether it's compositing or lighting or, you know, effects or whatever, it doesn't really matter, because at the moment there's jobs for everyone, whether it's compositing or any other job, right? Or any other discipline. It's a good moment, whether it's like a good moment to think like longevity, necessarily speaking. Well, not necessarily, because if you're not doing a good job, you're not going to be in the company just because, you know, the company is in need of a certain role. No, if you're not responding, again, if you're not thinking about the job and only, you know, thinking about other things, again, it's the same thing as ever, you know, that will not sustain you there. Again, it's about sustainability. The good part of this moment is the opportunity to get in the industry. Great, you know, because there's so many opportunities. But the rest is a little bit like before, a little bit, not exactly, but a little like before, as in, if you're not doing the job, you're not going to be there, because, you know, nobody needs someone that is not pulling their way, you know, their weight. It's not going to happen.
How can people find more of Pedro online?
Where people can find more about the program, so people can go to complayervfx.com. They will have everything in there. There's also free resources, so, you know, people that are not interested in the Next Level program.
And on YouTube.
On YouTube as well. Yes, that's right. Thank you for bringing that up. Complayer on YouTube for sure. There's a lot of interviews with many different people of different roles. A lot of tricks and tips. If I don't like to call it that, but that's how people call it. So let's stick with that kind of convention. The best way for people to be aware of all these things that will come up is just subscribing and, you know, ticking the, you know, that bell icon, and they will know when that
like happens. And subscribe. Yeah.
Right? Like and subscribe. I've never said that, actually. This is my first time. Yes.
Thank you again so much, Pedro, and I hope you have a wonderful evening.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you so much, Maxine.
Thanks for listening to the CG Spectrum podcast. For more on this episode, visit us at cgspectrum.com/podcast. Check out our show notes, where you'll find links to our guests and more behind the scenes. And if you're enjoying the show, please like, rate, review, and subscribe wherever you're listening, or share this episode with someone who might like it. See you next time.